Harper Audio presents The Laughter of Dead Kings by Elizabeth Peters, narrated by Barbara Rosenblatt, and directed by Jeremy M. Brewer. We open this book with a foreword by the author. Recently, I discussed with several mystery writer friends the problem of what we sometimes call the current now. One of my series is set in real time. The characters age appropriately with each passing year and with each volume. The Vicky series, and those of many of my friends, don't work that way. Vicky made her first appearance in 1973. She was not yet 30. The most recent volume was published in 1994, more than 20 years later, but Vicky had aged only a few years. She's still in her early 30s, although the world in which she lives has changed a great deal. The Cold War has ended. The horror in Iraq is underway. The Internet has its tentacles into everybody's lives, and people go around with cell phones glued to their ears. So how do we writers explain the inconsistencies and anachronisms? We don't. We can't. So please don't bother writing to point them out to me. Ignore them, as I have, and place yourself in the current now. To quote my friend Margaret Maron, to whom I owe that phrase and other excellent advice, isn't it fun being God in our separate universes, where we can command the sun to stand still, and it does? And now, The Laughter of Dead Kings.
Chapter 1.
I cover my ears, I close my eyes. Still I hear your voice and it's telling me lies.
My singing doesn't inspire thousands of fans to emit screams of delight, but I was a trifle hurt when my dog jumped up with a howl and streaked for the stairs. Usually he likes my singing. He's the only one who does like my singing. Otherwise, his hearing is pretty good. John was coming down the stairs. He halted Caesar's headlong rush with a peremptory order, something I've never succeeded in doing, and sauntered toward me. I hadn't seen him for 2 weeks. My toes went numb. He was wearing a blue shirt that matched his eyes and those of the Siamese cat draped over his shoulder. One of his hands supported Clara's front end, his long fingers as elegantly shaped as the small, seal-brown paws they held. Clara hadn't cared much for John at first, but he had set out to win her feline heart, the alternative being bites and scratches, and he had succeeded, with the aid of frequent offerings of chicken. They looked sensational together. He looked sensational. So I said grumpily, "Right on cue! Why can't you come in the front door like normal people, instead of climbing up to my bedroom window? It brings back such fond memories." Memories of the time when Interpol and a variety of competing crooks had been looking for him, and the art treasures he had made off with. He was now a respectable antiquities dealer, if I could believe him, which I probably shouldn't. Telling me lies had been one of his favorite activities. I picked up the grubby wad of white yarn and the crochet hook precariously attached to it, which I had dropped onto my lap, and pretended to study it, playing it cool so as not to be beguiled by the winsome smile and melting blue eyes. Damn him, he hadn't showed up for 2 damn weeks. London is less than 2 hours from Munich by air. I should know. I'd made the trip often enough. Thanks to an indulgent boss, I could get away from my job at the museum more easily than John could get away from his antiques business. Or so he claimed. Telling me lies? So how's business? I inquired. No answer. A thud and a loud Siamese complaint made me look up. Clara was on her feet, at his feet, glaring at him, and John was, not glaring, staring at me with a look of glazed disbelief. No, not at me, at the misshapen object I held. What is it? He croaked. You needn't be so rude, I said defensively. It's a baby cap. I'm not very good at crochet, but I'll figure it out.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?